Hey, what's up, everybody? It's your boy, Dave Noodles. We are on the Type 88 show, where we interview people about people turning their dreams into reality. And when it comes to someone who turns their dreams to reality, this guy's no stranger to the game. We got my guy here, John Seary, in the building. What's up, man?
Davey Noodles. What's up, brother? How's everything?
Doing good, man. Good to have you here.
Before been we, quite a journey. Before we get too deep, I have three things. Number one, am I allowed to curse? Because I have a very colorful vernacular and I do not want to add to the editorial process.
Yeah. So we have a mix of fans and people around the globe. So, you know, do what you can, but it's the, we don't edit the things. So we try to keep it as from the heart as possible. So everyone, right. You know, we all have our moments. So it's cool.
All right, I'm going to attempt to keep it as clean as possible. Have you ever had anyone light a cigarette live on camera? Is that okay?
That's cool with me. Yeah. As long as we're not recording in my pop's kitchen, so it's all good. So.
And the third thing, real quick, I'm sure you've told the stereotype story countless times on whatever form of media that there is, but
a couple of
times. I need to say, as a fellow creator and artist from Staten Island, that I've never seen anyone cultivate or give a platform to other artists the way that you have. I mean, I know artists personally that you have, you know, put on and given them, you know, so much airtime and hype, and you don't get enough credit for it, bro. You really don't. So on behalf of Staten Island's artists, I thank you with everything I have.
Bro, I really appreciate it. It's when I remembered. I always try to remember the moment when I was just starting. And when I shout out anyone or interview anyone, it's not they're just starting. I try to always remember that moment where I was trying to get on a show or I was trying to get somewhere. And I remember how difficult that was. And for me, I kind of wanted to show love as much as possible. And I'm so grateful that the brand has given me that chance and the show. Make a Park Radio and some, you know, it's just been grateful. I've been grateful to just be an open door vibe. And, you know, just, we could talk about things and shine light on people following their dreams. So thank you, man.
I don't know if anyone on Staten Island has done it as big as you. I really don't. I mean, you have done it so selflessly. It's incredible. It's been incredible to see, especially with, you know, don't stop dreaming and the thoroughbred, like everything you've touched has just been so heartfelt. And you could tell that.
You're really that guy. I really appreciate it, bro. It's really, my heart goes into everything we do. And anytime we do a collab, we try to make it something that we look back on and we're like, yo, remember that? You know, that's what I'm all about, you know, creating that moment now. So when we look back, I know we're going to look back at music and stuff like that. I want to kind of look back on stuff I've done and be proud of it. And there were so many opportunities to do kind of dirtier style merch, but that was never me, you know, like with the half naked girls or drug stuff. And I'm not against that. And, you know, people do what they do. But for me, it was always, I wanted to make sure that I could share it with my kid or I could share it with my grandma but keep that street appeal that my brother would like it. If I could nail that, I'm happy. So
you have to write your truth. You know, whatever it is that you have to be honest. You have to be sincere with yourself. There has to be a self-awareness and you have to put what, you know, it's something that you would like yourself. You know what I mean? And if you would look at something and say, I love something that's going to hit my grandma, this little kid or my brother, then that's who you are. That's what it's got to be.
Yeah. So I appreciate all that, man. And thank you for rocking with us we've known each other for quite a while. I was looking back at some of our emails.
Crazy.
Like 6-7 years, I remember just early on meeting at different events and connecting. So,
yeah, I remember even before that, my first stereotype moment was at Untouchable Cuts in Dungan Hills, seeing your merch in the storefront windows. Man, I was just like,
wow, one of
the most genius, brilliant logos I've ever seen in my entire life.
Wow, I almost forgot that, bro. When Paul Mars was working there.
Yep.
And
back in the day, man.
Shout out to Jimmy and Nick.
Mm-hmm. That whole crew, they
loose.
A bunch of incredible characters over there too, man. The amount of work they've done with kids and giving back to the community every year, and they're definitely a staple of Staten Island at this point, and they deserve it. They work hard.
I'm grateful to know them dudes, and they definitely put on, and I'm grateful that we've crossed paths several times, fundraiser stuff or Christmas stuff, and shout out to the whole Untouchable crew.
Best. Now, how do you feel about Staten Island's art scene in general? Because I had, personally, when I was really painting, I had stayed away from the Staten Island art scene for the most part, because I had found my success early on outside of New York. Like, even though staying true to New York and that being so much of who I am, I found it outside. But the few times that I had gone to events and stuff like that, I felt like Staten Island has a bad rap for being this bubble, you know, and it's kind of isolated. And I felt a little bit like Staten Island art community mimicked that, where I thought it was going to be different. You know, I thought it was going to be like the fray, the people who weren't that, but I thought it was like its own little bubble within the bubble. Did you get that vibe at all at some point?
So for me, bro, like it's interesting because there was like the art shows kind of caught this momentum. It became a thing. And I remember, for me, I tried to always be like, yo, you're having me there. It's always positive, you know, and I would always just, I'm very grateful. So many people have had us at events to the point where I was literally, I didn't need to get a job because I was doing so many pop-up shops. But I don't know, some, you know, it may have been a trendy thing, and maybe they didn't, that whoever was doing it, maybe they didn't connect it in a way that maybe fell wholehearted. Maybe it was just like a mishmash, like let's just throw 50 people in a room. They're going to turn that into 400 people and the bar is fed, you know? And
right.
And that's business. And you know, I know, you know, you're into boxing and I know that's big for business. Just bringing lots of people in the room to see something that's hyped up. And
as many eyes you can get on whatever it is, it's key to really any type of success. Anytime you're venturing off the path.
Yeah.
But that, I think my exposure was probably just a crappy situation. And I probably came into an event at the wrong time when it was kind of like that hype beast a little bit.
It definitely caught a trend. Cause I remember there was a gap in the scene, and you know, there were events that my crew, Projectivity, and a lot of friends of mine, you know, we did it cause we felt there was like a void or whatever. And, and some of them went really well. Some were okay, in terms of crowd, but like we always tried to curate it in a way that made sense. And I know when it got a little trendy and a lot of people were just doing them, and I think maybe they didn't know who they were having. And then you may get that vibe, especially when it's mixed with maybe a bar vibe.
Right.
Where
it's the wrong
when there's a bunch of people there and they don't even know about the artist, which is cool too, because it cross pollinates and people see that. So it's hit or miss, you know. I think I appreciate anyone that have done those things to kind of, they've supported me and different artists. Their intentions, I don't know, but that you may have ran into a vibe where it was maybe just a trendy, maybe it was a trendy vibe where it wasn't curated in the right way and it may have felt inauthentic.
Right, like you said, it wasn't really wholehearted.
Yeah. So, and I've been to some of those too, and I've crushed it where there were just mad people there just because it was a bar and they stumbled upon my stuff. So I never, some of them were different vibes, but probably the ones with maybe the more wholehearted vibe probably didn't make as much money too. So like
fair, as a business, right? Yeah. It's almost like cannibalizing, you know, it's like you're placating exactly to your audience.
Yeah. So, but for me, bro, I'm really grateful to have seen the scene blossom quite a bit. I remember coming up and going to like a Trunk Face show. This was like 14 years ago.
Insane.
And, shout out to Scott James. I remember going to one of his shows at, it was before it was Amendment 18. I think it was just called Dock Street.
Wow.
And I remember going to that, bro. And I just loved the grassroots effect. And I was like, yo, I got to throw a show. I got to do an event. And, I was inspired by that event. And I just, cause any event or concert I went to was like an Eminem or a 50 Cent or something really big. And right. that was like the first like curated show with just hip hop. No one I knew besides Scott at the moment. And that was like 14 years ago. And
right.
and I remember there was not too many shows. Robots Will Kill was thriving on the internet and doing some shows and stuff, but there weren't, it was kind of crickets in terms of just doing an event or going to an event with art made by people locally.
Yeah, Staten Island did have a big void, but with the amount of talent on Staten Island is completely absurd. Like I always said it, every artist I was ever at a show with blew me out of the water in ways that I couldn't even articulate. I mean, their work was just light years beyond where I was. And the only yeah. reason I had certain successes potentially over certain people was just because of networking. That's literally all it was. Like I was completely undeserving as far as talent goes, completely undeserving. But, you know, I just got in front of the right eyes and that was really it.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And it's amazing. I'm so happy. You know, I know a lot of people leaving the borough to go to Jersey or Florida or Cali or whatever. And I'm like, it's hard for me to see myself somewhere else. I really love it here. But and I'm really grateful to just see, you know, there's so many dope organizations now that really go hard. Staten Island Arts, Projectivity, you know, there's Sundog, there's so many, and there's so many opportunities now. And I think it's catching on and people are seeing like, yo, look, he's out there doing it, I could do it. And then it's just right. like, it's been like a snowball effect. And I'm seeing so many people now being like, oh, I'm done with my job. I'm just doing art now. I'm doing murals. And
that's the goal, man. That's huge. And I think seeing people, I think the real inspiration is seeing, like you said, where it's, oh, they're doing it and I could do it too. Like this shouldn't be a competitive space. It should be uplifting. There's plenty of room for all of us, you know, like, and I want to hype you so that you could eat more. And I want to hype this guy and the next guy. It shouldn't be competitive in that sense. I mean, there should always be a little bit of a, hey, come on, I see what you're doing. But at the same time, there's plenty of room for all of us. You know, there's no reason not to.
I've been saying that, man. I'm like, you know, there's a big enough pie for us all to be fed if we're yeah. willing to go hard. And I see so many people sharing, you know, they do an event, they get a grant, they hire someone to do this. So it's nice to see. And I think it's a good example for a future generation. You know, the younger cats that are maybe in their early 20s or just getting into rap or just starting painting. And, you know, we've had musications where artists, it was their very first show and their art right. was like 10 feet away from like Q Molly, who's like Rates. Painted murals for 50 Cent and like Chris Robots. And some of these artists are like, yo, this changed my life. Like I never been to an art show, and then to be at something with like 60 people is amazing. And they're like, I wanted to do it more when I came to this after this event. And
it's, you know, rising tides lift all boats, man. It's, you know, if you're standing next to somebody, if you're just starting out and you're standing next to somebody that's at that level, I mean, it makes you better. It makes you want to get better. It's so much. It's a wealth of knowledge. It's a wealth of, you know, networking and conversation. And like, look back at Staten Island's history with like Wu-Tang and all the big names. But you remember that cat, Eamon?
Of course, yeah.
Had that jam back in the day. F you, I don't want you back.
Yeah.
Please tell me you have heard his recent music.
Yo, his new stuff is fire, bro. He's cool. Dude,
I actually have this right here. So I got big into vinyl. This is his album, Golden Rail Motel.
Sick.
Dude, when I tell you, this kid is criminally, criminally underrated, and it's insane that he's not top 10 right now being blasted all over the place. That kid has soul. His voice has matured in a way that's just incredible. And beyond that, he's an amazing dude. Amazing. I've had a few conversations with him, and humble, gracious, just such a really good dude, man.
Yeah. It's crazy, bro. I remember I was going to school with someone that was dating him at that time when he had wild. Like, and it was like, it may have been about that person, you know, like, I can't say who, but
I don't want to know.
Yeah. But it was just crazy just knowing what was going on. And then all of a sudden we heard the record like a year or two later. I'm like, oh, snap. And I've heard some of the new stuff, and he, Yo, shout out to him. He's really, he's
phenomenal, really, man. He's he's a great dude. It's I fell onto his new stuff because one of his tracks was in that show, one of the last MTV Staten Island shows that came out. I forgot which one it was, but it was called Born and Raised, and it's got this hip hop flair to it. And his voice is super soulful and like just an incredible New York sound of a song. And then I started listening to his newer stuff, and I was like, oh, I couldn't believe that it was him. And then we actually used that song that was in that show for one of my fighter walkouts.
Oh, sick. It was
from Staten Island. He was super gracious about that. We, you know, we hit him up to make sure we could use it, and he was all on board, man. It was awesome.
That's sick, bro. Yeah, man. So, you know, I know you just, we've been talking about your music collection and different stuff. So maybe we could kind of just talk about, like, you know, maybe that versus battle where a few weeks ago, you know, New York was in a major way.
D-Block?
Yeah. Yeah, so how'd that feel like with everything bringing back the hip-hop to the new generation? Because I feel a lot of it, I felt like there's been a really good resurgence during the pandemic. I feel like we needed to hear real stuff, and like a lot of the trap stuff kind of fizzled because no one was really at the club. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like it was such a moment for hip hop. So like, what did you think of that experience?
For me, it's hard to gauge because that's the only real hip hop I listen to. You know, I think I stopped listening to modern or pop hip hop, I want to say around 2013, you know, just that I don't want to say I grew out of it. Doesn't sound right, but the music itself wasn't resonating with me. I couldn't, you know, connect with whatever the kids were saying. But I don't know where hip hop is today in relation to what hip hop was, because there always seemed like a through line. So by the time, like, let's say 50 Cent came out, there was a lore and a mythology to it where it was like, oh, Jam Master Jay gave him the nod, or he was connected to Supreme, you know, the street dude. And you learned about these areas that you hadn't been to. They would take you on a journey through, you know, these neighborhoods and these different parts of the country and all that, and even the world. And I don't know what the connection of modern hip hop is to that. Like, do they have regional hip hop? I don't know, you know, where these artists are coming from. Are you getting that same experience?
Yeah, I definitely hear you, man. I always try to point out hip hop as like, you know, you're driving through your state and you could pull over, you could get some fast food. It'll hit you quick. It'll taste good maybe in the moment, depending on who you are. Or you could pull over to granny's house, or you could pull over to Uncle Jimmy's house or whatever, and like sit over the fire and like enjoy, wait for something slowly cooked, you know?
Right.
And I try to look at hip hop or just music in general. I'm probably like 80% of what I listen to is hip hop. But I try to point out like hip hop like that. So it's like you're driving. It depends what you want to pull over and consume, you know. And
right.
we have any option. Yeah. So I feel you though. And a lot of the stuff now, as you see, like Vine, even though it's not here, but that was 6 seconds.
Right.
A lot of stuff is quick consumption, move on. Quick consumption, move on. Quick consumption, and it's like if it feels good in the moment, it do it. This, you know, and. And I see through maybe a business lens, like,
right.
Okay, cool. The shoe's fitting. Let's keep making more shoes like this. And
right. If that's their attention span is, that's fine. But like, think about something like Joe Rogan's podcast, where imagine if you tried to sell that to a network where you're like, okay, listen, we're going to sit down, have a talk show, no commercials. We're going to talk about whatever. One day I'm going to have a comedian on. Next day I'm going to have a scientist on. Next day I'm just going to have an author on that nobody knows anything about. The network would be like, are you insane? There's absolutely no way. And now it's, you know, one of the biggest shows in the world. So it's insane that a show that big got that big through a generation that's consuming 6 second, 30 second media.
Yeah. And so I think as you were pointing out, you know, it's definitely tricky to, it's so hard to compare it, you know. And I'm a fan of Migos and Drake, and then I'm a fan of Talib and Mos Def. So
it's a different thing.
Yeah, yeah, and it's entirely different vibes. And I love Travis. I've been to his concerts. You know, I would say Kid Cudi is like, he's kind of like the bridge between the old and new, but he's like this hybrid, unique, one of a kind kind of dude, you know. And
yeah, but he's still an MC. He's and true, those, yeah. I don't consider guys like that modern hip hop. Like when you go through like Kendrick and J. Cole, like I don't consider them modern hip hop. They were kind of the tail end of what I would say was our generation. But I'm so curious about modern hip hop because I never realized how severely ignorant to the culture I am. Like if I had any critique on modern hip hop whatsoever, it is beyond uninformed. Like I am so far out of the loop. And that's what kind of sent me down the hole of thinking about the experiences we had as a kid where it connected us to so much more. It gave us so much more of a perspective of the world. It led us into other mediums. It led us into older music. It connected us to our parents. Like, I just wrote a blog about this because I wanted to kind of streamline some of my ideas about it. But, like, I remember, you know, RZA would take these old beats from Motown songs, and my mom would hear that and be like, what's that? What, you know what I mean? And that would be a conversation starter. And then I'm sitting here learning about older music and all of that. Like, I feel like we had a different or a deeper appreciation for what came before. And I'm not saying that modern hip hop doesn't have that or fans don't have that, but I don't know if they do. You know what I mean? Like I'm completely lost to that. Do we have any Hall of Famers right now? Do we have anyone that's 20 years old right now that's going to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Not 20. You know, I could definitely see Drake just basically off everything he's done. You know, he's going to be like, I was thinking about this. I'm like, when I'm a grandfather, Drake is going to be like the Saved by the Bell, Family Matters, you know, like Prince, you know what I mean? He's going to be like that to the younger generation because they literally grew up and they've had all these decades of memories with him.
How crazy is it to hear 50 Cent on Old School at Noon? Like, oh, that was a shot to the heart. Yeah. I was like, oh, no, I'm actually old now. That's it. I'm old.
It's great. But it's cool, man. Like, I think things happen in 20-year cycles, too. You know, like, because the people that were maybe 10 when the Lox album came out, they couldn't buy it. They may have downloaded it on LimeWire, but now we're older and we're like, yo, I need to cop all these. I need to do this. And like, as you see, vinyl is bigger than ever. Tapes are surging, you know, and the crave to just have something physical, I think it hit me hard too during the pandemic where I got back into buying albums again. Like I just wanted to have physical touch because I was so out of touch and it was all like digital things and everything. And I'm a big CD buyer.
We grew up on music being tangible, but like with vinyl having a resurgence, is it kids that are buying the records? I mean, are you seeing 20-year-olds? Is that what's up? Is that where it's at?
Yo, you go to these comic shops and the spots where they sell Funko Pops and all this, bro. And they got the vinyls like right next to it. Billie Eilish, like right next to Sade.
That's dope.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's cool. Cause you know, I feel like now the parents are 30s, 40s, and they grew up on, 50. They grew up on Sade, you know, and now 50 has his own show. So there's like these bridges to generations, and we're like the bridge, you know what I mean? And I think, and these older cats that are doing it in a new way are bridging it too, so it's cool. There's always going to be that fast food stuff,
right? You know? Pop is pop. I mean, it's been around forever, and it's I think it was the pop artist Lord who had said something about like pop music is one of the hardest things to create because you're actually creating something that's so easily digestible to such a massive audience that's such an unspoken talent. And I never really thought about it until then. I was like, wow, it's a huge move.
Yeah, man. One of my favorite producers of all time, Max Martin, who's wrote, you know, I could just go on and on, but he basically raised the 90s babies on pop music, you know, and up to the present, making all the new Weekend songs off his album that are hits, Ariana. But all his stuff it was studied, it's all at a third grade reading level. All those hits.
Beyond brilliant.
Yeah.
Look at the longevity of somebody like Rick Rubin. I mean, he's still producing. He was one of the geniuses behind Def Jam. That guy's still pretty sure he did a Johnny Cash album like in the 2000s.
Nice.
But see the way you referenced a producer now. Are kids that versed in how deep that music goes? Because I heard RZA get asked by Donnell Rawlings. He was like, you know, is hip-hop dead? And RZA said, absolutely not. It's, you know, they had different ways of creating music where they had to sample tracks and loop things and this and that. These kids are literally creating something from nothing, and they could do it from their phone. You know, it's just stepped into a different evolution. It's connected differently.
Yeah.
But now, does that take away from these kids that are listening to the music? Does that take away from their depth of knowledge or their curiosity to look into other music and go deeper?
Yeah, it's so weird, man. It's like, as we're all different, we love different foods. I think it's the same with music. Like my brother, like he was put on the Biggie at like age 4, 5 for me, and Tupac, and hearing Cannabis and LL battles and stuff like that. And he's a digger. Like he's been about the mixtapes before streamings and stuff like that. But he doesn't buy an album. He doesn't buy anything, but he enjoys it in a different way. He goes to Made in America. He goes to the whatever festival, you know, he's more of a concert. That's how he intakes it. He'll stream it, but that's almost like, it's like the Costco sampler. Like, yo, I got to go see Travis now. I love this so much. And my friend Jerry, he's a college dude. You know, he would always talk about St. John, and he hasn't bought his album, but he'll go, he'll buy the merch. He'll spend $80 on a shirt.
Support.
So like I see a lot of the younger generation, they love the merch. They love going to the shows and like really experiencing it that way, which is the same way that I enjoyed going to Eminem and 50 and Wu-Tang and the Lox when I was 20s.
And way too young to even be at shows like that. Like when Eminem performed at the Lane Theater, like that was an all ages show.
Wow. Yeah.
Insane. It was like 12-year-olds there.
I wasn't allowed to go. I was like at that age where it was like, oh, come on, it's a teen. Yeah, but you're just 13. I was like, I'm still a teen. She's like, yeah, but next year. And I'm like, I don't know. And then next year he was in like he was running the world.
Grammy winning.
Yes. So yeah, the younger generation, they love stuff. It's just maybe they hold it differently. And and my dad too, he loves music too. He's a classical musician, but he doesn't really buy albums anymore. He'll listen to the radio. It's so weird. How just people consume things but he buys sheet music. And he learns from like guys that have been past and you know, long gone, but he's a musician, so that's how he'll support. And he'll like, he's a Broadway musician, so he'll buy the
I had no idea.
Yeah
That's awesome.
If you look up Barry Delman, he goes hard, and
I gotta check it out.
Yeah So he doesn't make his own beats and stuff, but he's classically trained. He could read anything. He plays 4 or 5 instruments at a live show. He's in a trio, and he could read. He's a retired music teacher, so he goes hard. So he doesn't buy music like me. I'm like the biggest music consumer of my family for sure, and I think I make up for everyone that doesn't buy albums.
And taking all the sales and making up for, like you said.
But like my brother will go to the show. I'll buy the vinyl and tape, and my dad will buy like the written music to learn it, how to play it.
That's insane how deep that goes culturally, where it's like there's so many different layers of nuance to music in general that it's like he's buying sheet music. Like that's literally the math. That's the 1 + 1 = 2 of the sound. Like that's so bizarre to even think about. But I worry about that with you know, the younger generation, where it's like for us growing up, if you had someone that was 10 years older than us, the connection to experiences were very, very similar. But our connection to a kid 10 years younger than us now is almost like a 50-year gap as far as experiences go. You know, like the experiences that are available to them. Yeah, so, yeah. Like, are they curious about, you know, what came before them as much as we were? You know, like, because grew up on 80s cartoons and 80s music and 70s, you know what I mean? Like, do they have that in them? Because I haven't seen it. One of my fighters, I wanted to pull the car over when he said this to me. He mentioned another one of the guys from our fight team was at a concert for some guy, Billy Joel. And I was, what do you use 21 at the time? Like, oh my God.
Yeah. Like,
how, you know, are they missing that?
It's interesting too, because people look at me too when they're like, My fiance all the time, like, she'll say a rock song, and it's I'll be like, I think I know that.
Right.
But meanwhile, when I say that with a hip hop, I'll be like, oh, what, you know, the new Saint John and whatever.
Right. It's just no concept.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, wait, so it's so weird how, like, we could be in a whole other spectrum. And I'll know a rock song, but I won't know too much about it. I won't know the history. I won't know what album it's on. But then there's people that are diehards and they know mm-hmm. every part of it. And
everything has that. Every type of, like, there's someone who's into making wicker furniture that they have an entire lingo that words that wouldn't, it would be like speaking another language if you or I sat down with them. You know, it's insane that how deep that goes. Well, it's, like, I stopped watching sports when I started painting. I stopped watching, like, baseball, football, and everything. I just didn't have time. If the Yankees walked by me right now, I literally would not know one player at all. Like, I would just.
It's crazy. I was saying, I literally said that the other day, and my lady's like, no, you know Aaron Judge. I was like, that's true. I do know him.
Right. He's the only one that I know just because he was smacking home runs at some point when he, like, just started. And that's it. But I couldn't point him out in a crowd. Couldn't do it.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy. There's all these little worlds, you know, like mm-hmm. like wrestling fans, you know, it's its own, they call it the WWE universe.
So same thing with comic books and any direction you go. But yeah. How do we bridge that gap to the kids younger than us? Like, if they're not interested in what came before them, just, you know, learning that generationally, whatever it is that they're into, how do we bridge that gap? Like, if that curiosity is not there, you know, because I think it creates a divide too as well. Because even instinctually, when I started listening to, you know, some sample modern tracks, I was like, I was that guy. You know, I was that knucklehead. I was like, ah, this is crap. This isn't what I grew up on. And like, what am I doing? Like, I caught myself.
It's
how do we do it?
That's a good question, man. I think there's been some amazing artists that have, you know, like, I'm a big Kanye fan, and I know he's king of sampling, you know, and Q-Tip, I know he was more of an early 90s where he really, really thrived sampling, like, 60s, 70s records. There's these gap bridgers, bridge gappers or whatever, where like stuff like that happens. I think there's good websites like Genius where they really break down histories of stuff. And there's YouTubes where they talk about 90s and 80s. And it's crazy. Like, that's like throwback now, 90s. And
surreal.
But there's so many platforms where people literally just, they'll help you consume something quicker. Like, they'll break down the TLC story and you can learn about everything they went through, you know, in 40 minutes. And there's a YouTube channel, I think it's called like Honest. He literally breaks down all stuff from, so there's just pockets, you know. And I think sometimes it could be, I was thinking this several years ago when Drake did the song Wu-Tang Forever. Right. And there was really no real Wu-Tang reference, but I was like, yo, I think this is a good moment that he's doing this, because I know there's lots of kids that are probably 13, 12, and this is the first time they're seeing those three words.
Wu-Tang Forever. Yeah. I remember when that album came out. I was 10 years old when Wu-Tang Forever came out, and it was the first Wu-Tang song that I ever listened to by choice, that I put the CD on, press play, Reunited, track two, song one on that album. And I remember that feeling of just being completely blown away, that it was one of the most cinematic sounding things I had ever heard in my life.
That
changed everything. Changed everything about the way I looked at music from that point on. Even the vocabulary they used, it was just... They were in their own lane. And I think that's big, like you said, that Drake, you know, kind of threw that out there and said, like, hey, go check this out. And I think it's even probably more impactful that he didn't have a Wu-Tang reference, because now kids are going, what's that?
Yeah. I think that it's good. There's certain moments where we're like, oh, man, this guy's becoming way too popular. Is he even hip hop? But people like Drake have done, even though they may be getting really blowing through the map in terms of popularity, he'll do things to help you reference.
Right.
Like some reggae stuff, or he'll put a reggae dude on. And some people will be like, oh, he's using the culture. I try to look at it like, yo, do you know how many people probably went to Jamaica because of this track? Like, he's boosting economies of spots that he's getting no residuals on. You know, there's so many influential things in him. Yay, Cuddy, there's so that they've done or said that is just
created markets. They've literally created entire economies, like you said, where it's just off one track.
Yeah. So there's artists, I think, that do hold the responsibility. I was talking about this with someone earlier, like, what's an artist's responsibility? And it's tricky, you know, because they want to entertain. They kind of figured out a formula that does work. But then it's like, what could they do? And I think when Drake would do a track called Wu-Tang Forever, I think that opened thousands of new kids. Oh, well, how many people listen to his album?
You know, right. Like, giving that exposure to something, you know, that may have meant something serious to him. And, you know, like these new kids are jumping in on it.
Yeah. And that data is too hard to figure out. There's no way to populate who listened to that and figured it. But I have a feeling there's instances.
You see the trends.
Yeah. There's lots of instances. And I saw a lot of shirts popping up that people maybe have not worn it shortly after that. And I'm not saying but he did have it. I'm sure he influenced some people.
Right. There's an impact on him creating interest.
Yeah. Because they're like, oh, well, what is my favorite guy like? Oh, word. Boom. And then I love the Jordan Lucas song. He did the song Will, where he talks about Will Smith. I don't know if you ever saw that.
No, I never.
One of my favorite songs, probably in the last few years. He just does a whole song about Will Smith.
Yeah.
And how, like, he does like 50 references from his movies to his song, and the video is just amazing. And then if you look at what happens next, it's even cooler. So just if you look that up.
No, spoiler alert. Don't tell me. I got to look that up.
Watch it unfold, because it unfolds. And
that's wild.
But something like that, if you're a young artist, you're not just a young person, you're 12, you watch this song Will by Joyner Lucas because you heard him on the Eminem album, or you heard him on the Logic album. Now all of a sudden he trickled over to you. Now you're a Joyner fan. You see this song Will, and us, it hits me in so many ways. But like, as a young person, if you check every reference, you're like, okay, I'm going to go watch Independence Day. I'm going to go watch this. I'm going
to
watch.
You just got opened up to an entire world. Like, you know, you just had a whole door unlocked that wasn't there before. And that exposure is huge. And you're right. I think that's an artist's responsibility. And remember back in the day, though, like the hip hop heads that were so, they're like, I can't listen to 50 Cent. I only listen to Necro and Immortal Technique. And it's like, dude, Necro and Immortal Technique like Fleetwood Mac. I hate to tell you, you know what I mean? Like, it's,
yeah.
So that would go the other direction too, where it's had those hip hop heads, or that's in every music.
Yeah, that's cool now, because we could just access everything. And it's just, I think now we're embraced. Everyone has a pocket where they could be embraced. You don't have to like chase what's popular.
Right.
But there's so many what's popular in all these little pockets, and you could find your pocket. You could be like an anime dude that loves lo-fi. You could be like an emo kid that loves Kid Cudi, but also, you know, goes to rock shows. You know, there's all these, I think the internet has opened us up to all these little pockets. So maybe it's hard to be as sentimental as we used to be because there's just so many options.
Yeah, but that's one of the things I love seeing with these young kids is that, because I was trying to look for their identity, you know, how it was like, okay, you could tell this rapper's from Houston back in the day. You could tell this rapper's from the Bay Area. But these kids now are so influenced by so many different things. And that I was like, oh, this is a beauty that went completely unnoticed by me. I was like, oh, okay. So this is where the power of the internet and being exposed, the evolution happened, where we were exposed to certain things, like they're exposed to everything. And it shows. Yeah. I think things that used to be fray have the ability to be super popular. Like anything that would kind of be fringe, you know, back in the day, like if you were a comic book nerd back in the day, you know, you were like an outcast, you know, you were one of the weird kids. Now it's, you know, everybody's into it.
Yeah. It's so cool. I know this sounds crazy, but I kind of wish I had the internet as a younger kid. I think I felt left out a lot as a kid. And like, I felt like maybe I could have found the pocket on the internet that maybe I was into different stuff. I had a few friends, but like the internet, you can make friends in different places. So of course it's a tool. A tool could be used to ruin something or build something. So maybe it was good that I avoided it at a younger age or it missed me, but I'm like, yo, you know, it could work in someone's favor too. But as of course we got to be mature and make decisions because we could go down different rabbit holes of stuff and spaces that could take us to a negative place too.
Unfortunately, that's usually what gets the most attention because that's always the loudest. You know, you're not hearing about like the kid that didn't have many friends finding, you know, an entire community out there who's across the world. Like I've met so many people, I have so many friends literally all over the world that I have never met face to face now because of the internet. You know what I mean? Like I was just talking to an artist in the Philippines and like I never would have had that as a kid, and it gives them so much more, like you said, than we had. It's a massive advantage, but I don't think it gets used enough correctly. I don't think it gets emphasized enough correctly.
It's tough, yeah, because a lot of crazy stuff's happening that really overshadows good things. And, you know, and there's also a lot of clicks that come to something that's bad over good. And so people see, you know, people may figure that out as a formula and like, you know what, why do anything good? Let me just do silly stuff or let me just do clickbait related stuff. And so that's the
path of least resistance. It's easier to go down the rabbit hole of nonsense.
Yeah. And it's tough because as a young kid, like now I could filter stuff out and it's still tough to see, you know, someone who's extremely successful and maybe I'm still trying to buy my first crib. It may hit me different, you know, a kid who maybe doesn't have anything and they see Travis Scott, even though they love him, it may make them feel a type of way if they see him with the hottest girl with the best kicks and this kid can't even buy a pair of Converse, you know, like
have the opposite impact.
So it's tough. Like as an adult, I'm still learning to filter my emotions when I see something and be like, okay, maybe you're getting a little jealous, bro. Like, all right, turn this off a little bit. You know, go hang with your parents or go
catch your ego.
Yeah, yeah. So as a young person, I could imagine it being even harder. And
when I ask young kids what type of content they consume, you know, and they rattle off, oh, I'm on TikTok for X amount of hours and doing this and doing that, I say, would you pay money to listen to Albert Einstein speak for 3 hours? Or I mean, what would you do to hear an unedited conversation Albert Einstein had? Oh my God, that'd be amazing. It'd be phenomenal. There are thousands of hours of podcasts and audiobooks and just of minds that are literally 10 times more brilliant than Albert Einstein ever could have been at your disposal right here, just right on the cell phone. So that doesn't get promoted enough. You know, like, look at, you know who Lex Fridman is?
No.
maniac of a genius. And he's another one of these guys where it's, he's this AI, you know, creator, and he's a mathematician, and but he's also a jiu-jitsu black belt. Like, he couldn't be further ends of the spectrum as far as it goes, but the guy has his own podcast. You can listen to him talk about literally anything for thousands of hours. And that's like, if me and you went to college right now, we're not going to get a professor that good, but you can have that. You can have that right now.
It's true. It's true. And I don't know. I forgot what artist says it, but we all got 24 hours. You know, I think Nas, we all hold the key or something. I think he said it on King's Disease. And it was just like, what are you going to do with those? You know, it's up to you to make these decisions. And it is easy to get kind of caught up in the whole, you know, binging of anything.
Right.
Anything that,
you know. It's easy to waste time.
Yeah,
It's really easy to waste time. I always tell that to artists that are coming up, because the amount of failure that I have experienced is absurd. The amount of try, fail, get back up has given me, you know, miles of experience. And any success that I'm lacking is 100% due to my own fault. But now I realize I'm in a position to be able to give artists, young artists, direction and guidance that I didn't have. So I'll tell them too, like, you have the same 24 hours as everybody else does. If someone's doing something that you want to do, you can, they don't have, you know, a time machine. They don't have extra time in the day. So it's, how many hours do you watch football for on Sunday? Oh man, I watched every game, you know, 9 hours I was sitting there. Someone who wants to do what you're doing spent all of that time with a pen in their hand grinding.
Yep.
It's not just going to happen. It is not just going to happen. So it's that time management.
It's so true.
I don't have time. That's one thing I can't. I'm busy. I don't have time. I can't. That's one excuse I can't accept. I can't swallow that one at all.
No, it's true. If you don't have time, you don't want it more. You know, you don't want it enough. If it matters, you got to make the time for it. And
exactly. Because someone is putting that grind in. Someone's doing all the work, and they're not going to succeed either. They might not, but they're doing the work to actually make it happen and get where you want to go. Can't just sit by. Can't do it.
Yeah, bro. I was literally just talking to my friend today, and he's been making music playing music since he was 6. He's 37, and now he's in the live band of 21 Pilots.
That's,
and he literally said, bro, like, I chose to just do music no matter what. If it was the difference of me start not eating much or eating, it didn't matter. I just did music all the time. I got as good with 3 instruments as I did on my first. That way everything all evened out. And bro, here he is now performing.
That's incredible.
21 Pilots. And he knows, he's like, in January, I'm going to be in Moscow with them. And it's like, he already knows his whole year for next year, you know, God willing. And
he's super what he loves. Blessed.
And he's like, and he just, you know, shout out to Jesse Bloom. He's on the new Nas album. He produced songs with Hit-Boy. And like, he's real. And he's like, you know what? Like, now that I'm getting these opportunities, I want to get even better. And he's like, you know, we see all these finished products, but it's
exactly.
Like,
exactly,
there's so much that goes into that finished product. And make sure, you know, anyone out there with a dream, it's not about just put the finished product is the finished product, but what have you done that led up to that?
Right. Because every single person on this planet has a dream. They all have that. Oh, I want to be an actor. I want to be in movies. I want to make music. I want to do this and that. I tell all these young artists too, nobody is anybody till they're somebody. You don't see that journey. I mean, now you have the access to it, social media, which is dope. Like, there's such a niche market, but like, there's a knife creator that I followed from the time he was literally doing it in his garage to the point now where he is a massive, you know, I mean, he's sponsoring one of my fighters. Like, shout out to Half Face Blades. Guy's an ex-Navy SEAL. He's phenomenal. But I got to see that journey. You know, we didn't get that. But I think kids are missing that a lot too, where it's, you know, oh, I want this, I want this. Got to do it. You got to get out there.
Yeah. I've had a few younger cats. I was talking to them. They were like, oh, I want to start a business. All I got to do is put this money in and then it'll just start flowing. I'm like, who's going to be out selling? Who's going to be out promoting? Who's doing the social media? Who's taking the photos? It's not you buying a bunch of equipment and then all of a sudden people are ringing your doorbell because you have these big bubble things that people could dance in or whatever, right. You know, and there's now work that is required to, and learning curves and dealing with competitors and people that will outbeat you in price and quality.
And being willing to fail. You have to be willing to fail. You have to check your ego, and it's where humility comes from too, because it's like, if the greater good or your goal isn't bigger than your immediate ambition or, you know, that quick fix, it's not going to happen. You can't do it. That's where the humility comes from.
Yeah. Yeah. It's gotta be a long game where you're not looking at like, oh, well, it's not fast food. Or, you know, what we're doing when we have a dream. It's literally, imagine cooking a meal for 15 years mm-hmm. and finally eating after 15 years.
But even could fast you do food. That? No.
Could someone do that? Like, it's hard to eat shit for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you just keep going, you're going to figure something out. You're going
to... You're going to screw up enough times until you know how to do it. And every time that you don't do it right, at least you can pass that on to somebody else and say, hey, definitely don't, you know, you're going to make your own mistakes. I can keep you from making mine. You know, that gives you a leg up, gives you an advantage. I mean, I think that's kind of become my superpower at this point, is being able to, I've screwed up so many times that now I could tell kids, don't do this, 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 and this. That's the way to go. That's the direction.
It's true. There's been a lot of experiences I've had, man, that I was like, oh, man, this was the worst. I wish I didn't have to deal with that. But then it's like there's so much that I'm doing now because of that, or things I'm not doing, or things I'm doing different.
Right. It opens up so many doors.
All right, cool. I'm not going to do 50 events a year. If someone's going to sue me at this one or something like this is going to happen. This way. I'm like, all right, cool. I'm going to just lock myself in the house and do as much work as possible. And let's see what happens. And the pandemic, I'm grateful that I was in good health during it and was able to just lock in and seeing a lot of fruits of my labor. And
it's kind of been a blessing in disguise. Is, you know, people that did use it to capitalize on really, you know, honing and sharpening their skills. Like I said, a blessing in disguise. It really has.
Yeah. If you're out there, you know, focus on that, building the house, not taking a photo in front of it, you know, right. And if you just laced groundwork and the wood and the foundation and day by day, you're not going to build it in one day, but you'll right. see. And if you start now and if you go, okay, 10 years and I don't tell anyone, you know, my friend Jesse, he was able to do it. He's with 21. That was his own path. Like right. he may have taken that spot, but there's so many other spots there's so many other dreams out there. And if you just don't stop dreaming, you're going to figure it out. You're going to figure something out that be like, oh shit. Okay. Maybe I'm not the best with the guitar, but oh wow, I'm really good with the lighting. You know, you were at the event, you figured it out, and then all of a sudden you got caught up in it. And now all of a sudden you're like a lighting director at some Broadway show, you know, and it's like from you hitting your head on the wall from dreaming this way,
mm-hmm.
you sometimes learn that maybe that dream wasn't the exact way you imagined it, but you're still dreaming and you're still finding a way to live a dream. And my dreams have changed. I'm no longer the person that wanted to rap. I'm enjoying being behind the scenes and people not knowing
right.
where that came from, but knowing that I had my hand in it. And it's just interesting.
Look at someone like Mark Echo. When was the last time you saw that guy publicly? But that guy started designing t-shirts that, you know, off money he got from his sister and now he owns Complex, which has turned into First We Feast, which has turned into Hot Ones. Like, you could trace a path from Sean Evans and Hot Ones back to Mark Echo's graffiti t-shirts.
It's crazy.
Because his dream changed a million times. And that was, I don't think artists talk about that enough, too, is, like, that was one of my biggest heartbreaks was I got too popular too quick with painting. I got way too much success way too early on. And my, even knowing the trappings of ego, my work suffered severely. Like, you see the drastic dip in how bad my art got after I kind of started getting that little bit of notoriety. It wasn't much, you know, relatively. But when I couldn't paint anymore, when I lost that love, when I lost that passion, it took me 5 years just to say, I'm a different person now. And that's okay. That's okay that that's in the past. Like, that legitimately broke my heart. That was probably bigger of a heartbreak than most of the severe, you know, relationship stuff or death in the family. Like, that was a heartbreak, and I had to mourn that as bad as, you know, anything else.
Yeah.
It sucked. You know, but artists don't talk about that enough either. Like, it was so attached to who my identity was. But I did that to myself. You know, I made it like, I'm this artist. I'm this artist. And I didn't allow myself to say, I'm going to do something else. And that transitioned into writing or managing MMA fighters. And all the knowledge I got from that experience informed so much of what I'm doing now, which is, like you said, behind the scenes. And it happens.
Yeah. And it's crazy because in that moment, it's hard to really pinpoint, like, oh, this is going to be the moment that shows me. You're like, nah, this sucks. Like, oh, I don't want to deal with this. Why is this happening? Like, I thought this was meant to be. But then you look back, it's so hard to pinpoint it in the moment and find peace in it. I'm talking about stuff in the past.
You can't. Hindsight's 2020.
I was fucked up. Oh, I was messed up off it. And I'm like trying to understand, because when things don't go right, I'm like, I don't know why this didn't go right. And you're just questioning. But then you look back and you're like, wow, that had to happen. Okay. Mm-hmm.
My first gallery I ever had was in Williamsburg. And I had 19 paintings on the walls, all my work. That was it. Promoted the hell out of it. It was a big party. There was drinking, music, all that. No one showed up but some of my closest friends and my family. And I was devastated. I was embarrassed beyond belief. And I was like, all right, that's it. I'm done painting. But I had a party again the next week. I said, no, like, I got to do it. And, you know, thank God I had the sense in the moment to say, no, I'm going to keep pushing. But there was plenty of times where I took a hit and I was just like, I'm going to go crawl in a hole for a year. Those moments hurt, man. Like you said, you don't see it. You don't see it in that moment. It's hard. It's hard to find that peace. It's hard to find that lesson.
Yeah.
Which that's a skill that you learn too. You know, you get better at it if you hone it.
It's true. Yeah. And you were talking about just experience and just, you know, you could sit down and listen to like a podcast, but like I always recommend, and I highly recommend anyone consuming quality content, right? But then I always tell everyone, like, just start. Even if it costs you $100, maybe you don't have a store on Fifth Ave, make 5 shirts.
Right. Give them out.
Print out 10 mixtapes. You know, engrave a little knife, you know, with the initials of your neighbor because they like that stuff. Just start, because you're going to figure things out as you go. And sometimes I see dreams that are just so, so, so big. They're too hard to even, they're like level 50, year 10 goals. Right. That can't be your first goal. No. The goal should just be to start. Find a way to just grassroots, you know.
Grassroots. One foot in front of the other.
Yeah, yeah. To,
they say, right. So you can't run before you can crawl. You have to. You have to crawl first. And it's like you said, just start. Even if you want to be a writer, sit down today, write for 10 minutes. Sit down tomorrow, write for 10 minutes. Just start there.
Yeah. Because
if you didn't do that today, you're not going to become a writer. You're not a writer.
I agree. I get so frustrated when my mom's friends' kids will be like, oh, you know, I'm going now to get my master's in screenplay writing. And I'm like, I was like, yo, you should just go to freaking like Phoenix, Arizona, take some mushrooms in a forest and experience something for like $400 instead of $90,000. Like, go have an experience and then
Google
take that
a script.
Yeah.
It's so many, like, I had to deal with that with managing. Dude, I'm a high school dropout. I dropped out my senior year of high school and became an MMA manager, where I'm sitting here dealing with massive companies and sponsorships, and I'm learning legal language and I'm doing contracts and all this stuff. And then I had a friend of mine that went to school for sports management. He's like, hey, if you ever need any help, you know, let me know. I'm like, dude, you're doing the complete opposite of what you set out to do right now. And I fell into it because of the skills that I learned. It's like you said, you don't need to always make that severe of an investment, like going to college, or, you know, it's half that stuff is obsolete by the time you're out anyway. Look at, if you went to school for marketing, everything you learned is completely obsolete by the time
you
get out.
But what if you started a lemonade stand with $50 and you knocked on every door in your neighborhood? You would have learned more talking to 100 different people from 40 different cultures and 20 different countries.
Right.
And maybe hearing, and hearing 99 no's and still going, then you probably would have learned. And I don't shit on school. I highly recommend, you know, you need to be a nurse. You need to be a doctor. You need to stay out of trouble. I highly recommend it, but don't use it to distract.
Right.
Doing something.
We're constantly looking to get online and be told what to do. And that kind of becomes an extension of that, where it's like, went to high school, want to do this in my life. I'm going to go to college for that, which, like you said, I'm not knocking on it, because I think you should do it. I think it's a great experience, especially socially and, like, you know, culturally. You get around so many different things, you get to explore ideas, but it's not the only avenue. If you're not willing to say, I'm going to get off the path and look around and see what's going on over here, you're not going to get there. It's very, very rare. It's very rare. How many kids did we grow up with that went to college that wound up doing something virtually different than they ever set out to do or went to school for?
Yeah, I've been saying this a lot lately. Start getting used to enjoying swimming in the mud.
Mm-hmm.
Swim in the mud, but enjoy it.
Right.
You know, and we could, I'm grateful I went to school and I met some good people and I made my parents proud or whatever. And I'm sure it kept me out of mad trouble.
Hell yeah. That's the other thing too.
And I'm grateful I have no debt. I didn't want to go to anything that was beyond my parents' budget, and I'm grateful my grandma did hook me up. I am privileged in that way. So it gave me a leg up for sure. But
you utilized it. You utilized what it had for you. You utilized every aspect of it, because, like, you got those cultural experiences. You got to meet awesome people.
But it's crazy, bro. Selling cookware and meeting people from Nigeria and Guyana.
Wait, that was your foot in, kinda?
No, I'm saying doing that.
Oh yeah.
And going to like Connecticut, a 10-hour day, and making $0 because I didn't make a sale. I learned more doing that than I did in college.
Because you had to figure it out. I think it's got to be universal. It's like anytime you have to figure something out for yourself, you learn 1,000 times more. Even if your lights go out and, like, you're trying to fix a switch in your house and you're trying to figure it out, like, you get so much more out of that than, you know, if you were taught how to do something like that. It's the experience. You cannot put a price on experience. It's invaluable.
Just meeting people from different cultures, taking L's, making 3 G's in a day, or making 0 in 4 months or even 6 months, taught me so many things and, like, thickened my skin to a point where, like, now if I don't sell merch in a day, I know that my work ethic is going to circle back and then there's going to be good days. So I don't, it's crazy. And I'm grateful for school. It was a great experience and it did keep me out of trouble, but actually going out and taking L's and, like, trying and figuring out sales techniques and doing that for like 6 years and meeting people from all different walks.
You could have been Mark Cuban's protege and you wouldn't have learned as much as you did, you know, just on that grassroots knocking on doors.
It's true. Go out. I tell anyone, if you're not doing your job now, like the thing that you want to do, just hit up, make it your job. If you have free time and if this is what you want to do, you should find the time. Hit up people all day telling them that you do this. If until you have enough people willing to give you a shot, but then when they do, be willing to do it all for free and do the best job possible, that they will all say you are awesome.
Dude, that was a huge part of me getting good at managing. Was I had to send out a billion emails that made me feel like I felt so scuzzy doing it, where I'm like, I'm faking it till I make it. It's literally what I did. Hey, I'm a manager of so-and-so, blah, 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 changing the way that I spoke. And it's the only, people start believing it, you know, and the next thing you know, it's like, oh, I am that guy. I'm doing that. But you're not going to get there without doing
it. Yeah. You were swimming in the mud, man.
Embracing the suck.
Yeah. And there's so much more to that. There's so much that leads up to that Photoshopped photo that we post, you know, and or that key that we hold that say, yo, I got the new crib. Imagine how many hours someone had to work to take that one photo.
Right. Nonstop.
That process.
And everyone I talk to that has any level of success always talks about the early days. Like, there's nothing more fun than that. It's, you can go on a roller coaster, right? They're built for fun. They're amazing. You never remember a roller coaster. You never sit around with your friends and tell a story about, oh, remember that time we went to Six Flags and the thing went up and then down? Like, you're not getting it. Everyone loves that suck, the grind, the hustle, where you took the L's and you were out there. Like, that's the most fun part of it. So it's like, don't just be scared of taking the L. It's like, I promise you, that is the most enjoyment you will get, far beyond even the success that you want. Because there's no finish line. You get to whatever finish line you think you have in your head, you're not going to be happy. You're not. It's all in the journey. It's all in that one step in front of the other, and that's where it is. That's where you're going to find the happiness of.
Yeah. It's real talk, man. It's cool. It's just cool talking to you and, you know, really trying to pinpoint different emotions about the grind and music and new and old school generations and how everything connects. And yeah, man, it's crazy. Time just really flies. I feel like we could probably do this every week.
Hell yeah.
So for anyone that wants to learn more about, like if they need someone or know an artist, so you've been mostly managing like fighters, you said.
Yeah.
Where could they find you and all that stuff?
Hit me up for any reason, any help, anything, any guidance you need on Instagram at John_Siri13. Any questions you have about any type of creative process, I am more than willing to help you out where I can. And if I can't, I will tell you straight up, I'm not going to be a snake oil salesman, but I would love to help as many people as I can in general.
Yeah, I'll pull it up real quick for anyone. Oh, wait. Hold on. Just spell that for me real quick.
At John_Siri13. SEERY.
_13.
Yeah. No, _Siri13.
John_Siri13. Gotcha.
Got it.
I'll pull it up for anyone who's on the video side of things. So, yeah, connect with my guy right here.
Thank you, brother.
Oh, this is fire right here.
Yeah, it's some of the recent digital stuff I've been doing.
So, yeah, make sure to connect with my guy. And if you're listening on the, that's JOHN_SEERY13. Hit him on the IG.
Thank you so much for having me on, man. I appreciate it. I really do. Love chopping it up with you.
Yeah, man. You know, it was dope. you posted something on Facebook and it started a convo. I was like, yo, we need to go a little bit deeper into it. And we really did. And
exactly. That was one foot in front of the other, man. That was just doing it.
Yeah, man. So here we are. And yeah, man, you're always welcome back.
Thank you, brother. And, anytime you want.
Yeah. When we're back in the studio, we'll definitely do another one. And,
yes. I definitely look forward to that. I would love to be in the studio. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Cause I know we were talking about like, you know, being personal and really connecting with things. And I know we couldn't have been in the studio this time, but definitely futures. And yeah, man. So for anyone out there, once again, make sure to connect with my guy, see all the great work and all the fighters he's helping and the art he's creating and, you know, really out there living his dreams.
Thank you, bud. Doing my best.
Everyone out there, you know, make sure to subscribe on Spotify, Apple, iTunes. Of course, we're live every other Wednesday on Maker Park Radio. And we got a great event coming up October 9th. It's called Where I'm From. All you got to do is come out, share a story about Staten Island, either why you love it, how you found yourself here. Share a story and you get an exclusive merch that day. Why supplies last. We're giving away over 100 something shirts for the day with designs by Kerry Sheehan. Chris Robots Will Kill, Sharpie, and then Stereotype Co. So just a day, just wanted to give back. It's our first event after a long time of being locked in, and we wanted to just show love to the community. And shout out to the City Artist Corps for making it possible. And yeah, so come out October 9th, 1 to 5 o'clock. I hope to see you, bro. Come out.
Phenomenal. I'll be there, bro. I will be there.
Yeah. So I'm going to pull up that real quick for anyone who's on the video side of things. It's going to be a great event. I'm really excited. Let's see what this is. And then we got one other one in the works. I'll definitely be letting people know about that when it comes, but here it is. October 9th, Hub 17, right in Staten Island. And for more info, you could just go right to the website and, hope to see everyone there. So, yeah, bro, yeah. You always got my support. I look forward to seeing
Dave. Likewise, thank you.
And enjoy your night, my dude.
Appreciate you having me on.
And everyone out there, remember, don't stop dreaming. Enjoy your evening.
Peace.